This meeting is now being recorded.
Hi, this is Greg Shatton, and welcome to the Accountability Jurisdiction Subgroup meeting number 51 and the first one for the 2018 year, 1900 UTC. Welcome to all who've been able to join us. We have a short agenda. As you can see, really one major feature. So after administration, we'll be spending the bulk of our time analyzing the comments received so far on the jurisdiction subgroups proposal. After that, we'll have some time for AOB, and our next meeting will be the 24th of January. I'm running this meeting off of my tablet, which does not prioritize hands, so please let me know who's first if there are multiple hands up. So let us go directly into the administration. First, I'll ask if there are any changes to statements of interest. Caboose, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Hello, do you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes.
Greg, do you hear me, please?
Yes, Caboose, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good evening, Happy New Year to all of you. Did you say that you will run the meeting up to 9:30? Because we planned for 60 minutes, but not more. Unfortunately, if we have informed us, I have no problem. But I have another meeting, so I cannot stay more than 1 hour. Then please let us not decide as such.
Yes, I have this call booked for 60 minutes. Let's see if we make a good time on our review of the comments. If we do, we can keep the future meetings to 60 minutes. If we don't, we'll have to make them longer. But right now, I'm on 60 minutes.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much, 60 minutes. I have no problem for 90 minutes, but if you announce it in advance, I have no problem at all. But unfortunately, I have another meeting, and I don't want to miss this meeting. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I don't see any hands for changes to statements of interest. I, however, do have a change to statement of interest, which is that I have joined a new employer, the law firm of Moses and Singer in New York City. So that is one change to my statement of interest. Also, I have been elected to the board of the New York chapter of ISOC, and joining Aubrey Doria there. So that is another change to my statement of interest. Also, I'm no longer the president of the IPC, to the extent that that's even on my statement of interest, it isn't anymore. So that covers my changes of interest, so to speak. Do we have anybody who is audio only or who's only listed as a phone number? I see one phone number person. I guess we have no audio only. And who is the phone number ending in 1643?
Hello, can you hear me?
613. Yes, we can.
Yeah, this is Louisa Pies from Canada, and good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, and welcome. So why don't we go directly to the main event, and we can start with the table prepared by staff, which excerpts and adjusts or rather arranges the answers in the comments that we receive. So if we could put that up in the Adobe Connect. I saw it there before. So as people should know, but just in case, Bernie, if you could give the a brief description of how this table was put together, what the colors mean, if anything, and that will kind of help us as we move through it.
Thank you, Greg. Basically, staff went through all of the comments. If there are any errors in here, they are mine because I did the jurisdiction. And we tried to isolate the comments per meaningful categories to simplify the work of the subgroup. In addition to that, we used a tool that we've used in the past, which is the color coding, which is dark green means unqualified support, light green means support, but there may be a few suggestions or comments. Yellowish orange is, you know, iffy at best, whether it's support. There are certainly significant suggestions. And pinkish red means disagreement. If there is no color, it's because there was no reference to something that was in the recommendations, and therefore staff could not classify it as one of those colors. Now, the colors are a best effort by staff. I think we've done a decent job of it, but we are certainly open to changing these. This is simply a tool to facilitate your job, and if we got some of these wrong, please don't hesitate. We'll be glad to fix those. Two further points before we get going. The strategy that we've been using in the other subgroups and we've used in the past, which seems to make sense, is for the group to tackle these per category as presented on the screen right now. So basically the subgroup can go through all the comments on one topic and then decide what they want to respond to these comments and then move on to the next one. That seems to work well. And then my final comment, as noted in the transmittal email, we are working to a fixed date. The final date is 9 March when we have our next face-to-face meeting in Puerto Rico. If the subgroup has not provided the plenary with recommendations that can be approved by the plenary, they cannot be included in the integrated final report, which goes out for public consultation. And the reason for that, as has been explained numerous times by the co-chairs, is that there are fixed timelines for public consultations, and we are bound to finish by the June meeting. So that means the reality of the situation is that 9 March, the plenary has to approve the final recommendations. Staff, as the package goes up, into a final report that integrates all the recommendations and get that out for public consultation. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bernie. I think that's very helpful. So let us jump right in to the first topic, which is choice of law. And we have comment we start with from the business constituency. The bottom line of the business constituency's comment is that on principle, the BC favors retaining the status quo in order to maintain certainty and predictability for businesses. The we don't need to read these out in their entirety unless people would like that. I will ask if anybody wants to that more fulsome approach. We also have some, at least Steve DelBianco, I believe, from the BC. Steve, if there's anything further you'd like to say, I see Steve says in the chat, we also noted our disagreement with a minority position. So that's probably dealt with later in the grid here. If it's not, we'll make sure to take it into account in any event. Caboose, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
I ask you that, what does it mean, the status quo? The status quo means that whatever we have agreed before public comment, is that the status quo? Could I have some clarification? Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. That's a good question, good point of clarification. By status quo, I assume what is meant, and I think this is the way it's referred to in our report, the status quo is the current situation, which is where the choice of law is left unstated in the contract. But since Steve DelBianco has his hand up next, I'll ask Steve to confirm that's the case and make any other remarks about his the submission of his constituency. Steve?
Thank you, Greg. Can you hear me?
I hear you well.
All right, thank you. Just wanted to check. Bernie answered a question in the chat, which was, I wanted to know why the BC comment was noted as light opposed to unqualified support. Bernie clarified that while we had unqualified support of the sanctions relief, that we actually took the invitation to recommend one of the methods with regard to arbitrating contract disputes. We selected status quo. Now, I was asking why that wasn't unqualified support, but Bernie clarified that anybody who actually picked one of the options that was out there gets the light green. And I won't argue with it. I just wanted to understand how you came about to that. And so those who are unqualified, that would mean that what? The unqualified support didn't pick any of the options on contract dispute, or did they pick one particular one?
They basically just said they supported the recommendation for choice of law, and, you know, if it didn't go any further than that, then we took that as dark green. But as I said, I don't want to get tripped up in this. This is just meant to be helpful and not moved in any way.
Thank you, Bernie. If I could just continue for just two more clarifications, I'd be interested in knowing whether there's a tally on choice of law, a tally about those who selected menu versus status quo, and whether we could discuss that on the call. And then the second point is that the BC noted a disagreement with a minority report in its conclusion. And we did so only because the minority report was a sufficient part of the submission, and it wasn't requested, but we added that as well. Thank you all.
Thank you, Steve. Any other comments or questions on the BC's position? I think we should keep a tally of the responses to the options. Not dispositive, I think, but it's worth knowing. The next comment we received was from the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group, NCSG. The excerpt is brief. The NCSG believes that, as it has been highlighted in the report, the recommendations on the choice of law should be discussed with the ICANN organization, the GNSO, and the contracted party. So I guess that is dark green because it didn't make a choice, but just recommended continued work within the community, essentially, on probably certain parts of the community. on this question. If there are any comments on that point. The next thing is a joint response from the Registry Stakeholder Group and the Registrar Stakeholder Group, also known as the Contracted Parties House. Registries and registrars appreciate that the recommendations respecting choice of laws and choice of venues clauses inform registry registrar contracts with ICANN are presented as suggestions for consideration by ICANN and the Contracted Parties House, and acknowledge the particular importance of allowing registrars and registries to have direct influence over changes with the potential to introduce broad changes to their contractual frameworks. So that is general support for our approach, but without any support for a particular approach at this time. Any comments on that? Seeing none, I'll move on to the Government of Denmark, which supports the proposals contained in the document and attaches specific importance to the recommendations regarding choice of law and choice of venue. They indicate favoring a menu approach composed of a small number of countries from each ICANN geographic region, believing this will be a benefit for registries and registrars, including contracts with ICANN, contribute to accountability, and ICANN serving the global internet community, with the same going for the choice of venue in registry agreements. In the document, our document, on page 24, it states the method of choosing from the menu also needs to be considered. Denmark suggests that the registry could simply be able to make a choice from the menu, or it could, well, actually, no, this is still the quote. And so it's there could be a choice from the menu, or there could be part of the registry's negotiation. It's Denmark's view that if a menu approach is implemented, it is important that the weak party, the registry or registrar, freely can choose the applicable law and venue, and that it is not left to the parties to negotiate, since ICANN is the only one that registries and registrars can enter into contract with, and they suggest that should be reflected in the final recommendation. Any thoughts on that? So the short summary of that is support for a menu of a small number of countries and support for having the contracted party or to-be-contracted party be able to choose from the menu without having to engage in any negotiation with ICANN. Italy comes next. Oh, I see a hand from Caboose. Caboose, please go ahead.
You asked whether or not the end is coming. Lack of comment does not mean that we agree with what he said. So we have to reflect on that. We can't make any comment at this stage before hearing all views of the people. So we would be happy to listen, and then we decide maybe at the next meeting. So please kindly do not interpret our silence that we agree with what was proposed in either of these things. So we want to reflect that. Thank you.
Greg, if you're speaking, we can't hear you. For those that had trouble hearing Caboose, you seem to be a little far away. Caboose was mentioning that no comment at this time does not mean we're supporting the comment that was made, but simply that we have no comments on it for now, and that we have to then see all the comments before the group can start making up its mind. Sorry, Greg, over to you.
Thank you,
Bernie.
Do
you want me to repeat?
Did Bernie capture what your point was?
Yeah, what I said, I repeat that we are happy to listen to the discussions tonight, but we do not make any even preliminary decisions if we don't comment on what you said, Greg, does not mean that we agree with that. We just listen to that for the time being. This is the first thing. So let us not to make any decision saying that there was no comment. That means people agreed. So we just listen to the comments. That's all. We don't make any decision at this very meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose, and that's correct. This is just the first reading, and whether we make any changes based on these comments is something we'll have to specifically discuss and affirmatively come to consensus on. So I will interpret silence as just being in listening mode and not being any expression of an opinion of any kind. So next, we have the government of Italy, which comments that the status quo option will not be a proper solution for the future, given the past experiences with regard to the new GTLD program. I don't know if that's further elucidated in the Italy comment. I'm not sure what experiences they're talking about and how that relates to the jurisdiction question and choice of law, but perhaps we'll see if we need any further information on that. They also suggest that implementing the California approach could eventually create a sort of undesirable hierarchy among jurisdictions, and also express some concerns regarding the other three options, too, noting that a system with a clear legal framework is needed to implement them, which has not been defined properly yet. Also note that a special reference needs to be made to child protection. There is a concern that any move away from the present arrangements could possibly permit or encourage future registries to engage in venue shopping in search of a jurisdiction with materially lower standards of child protection laws or regulations, or materially weaker mechanisms to enforce compliance of hitherto widely accepted standards. Therefore, ICANN should make it clear that irrespective of the choice of jurisdiction, in all relevant circumstances, the term of the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child must be met or exceeded. I don't know if we have any comments on that point. I see a comment in the chat from Caboose that I could favorably consider a proposal from Italy. This is a preliminary reaction. I think the question of forum shopping probably could be applied more broadly than the issue of child protection. And I think that also goes to perhaps raises the question of what the real effect is of the choice of law provision. I don't think we necessarily need to get into that discussion today, but I think, you know, the Italy position assumes that the choice of law in the agreement could materially affect the business obligations of the registrar. So that's an assumption that may need to be tested. Seeing no hands, we can move on to the government of Russia. Russia comments, first of all, we would like to notice support of recommendations related to the choice of law and venues, which provide flexibility of law provisions in registry and registrar contracts. After that, we have the any comments on that? Seeing none, move on to the I2 coalition, which agrees that the subgroup cannot demand changes to the RA and RAA. Thanks us for properly framing the conversation when these agreements are revised. I2 is making a statement of preference for the approach that should be taken to address venue. It does agree that addressing venue would enhance ICANN accountability and decrease business uncertainty for contracted parties. that's somewhat the logical underpinning that the BC cites for the status quo approach. So I guess there's a question of how one might actually decrease uncertainty. Any comment on the I-2 comment? Seeing none, move on to the comment that came from the ICANN board, which agrees with the CCWG's clarification that it cannot make recommendations requiring ICANN to make amendments to the RA or RAA outside of the contractually required amendment process. The board looks forward to the broader participation of contracted parties in reacting to this recommendation to better understand their views on the issue. The board goes on to say that there's not yet been an impact or feasibility assessment of any of the approaches presented by us and appreciates the broad range of approaches presented. In addition, the recognition that there are some portions of the agreement that are appropriate for uniform treatment is an important concept to provide for some level of predictability in practice and enforcement. I think that this harks back to our discussion of having certain portions, perhaps, or one of the possibilities is to have certain portions of the agreement subject to a single choice of law and others subject to a choice of law. That is only one part of one suggestion. Board wraps up by saying that any potential study of these ideas would need to assess the impact, as these scenarios could raise concerns related to potential loss of predictability in enforcement or increased enforcement costs. Any comments on it? Seeing none, but I will note again this is kind of the second comment at least that goes to kind of the question of an impact study or to understanding what the effect of a particular choice of law choice would be. Next is the International Trademark Association. And there's a note here to please see the original response for the complete text. I guess this comment was more wordy, but this is kind of the heart of it. There's a significant risk for INTA and its members, and by extension, all consumers who rely on trademarks to create accountability and promote fair and effective commerce. The RA and RAA include provisions that brand owners rely on to protect their marks, such as RA Section 2.8 and Spec 7 and 11, and RAA Section 3.77 and 318.1. Those provisions must mean the same thing for every contracted party. A regime where 318.1, for example, means one thing for one registrar, but another thing for a different one, because the provisions are interpreted differently under different laws, defeats the purpose of developing consensus policy in the first place. For that reason, INTA agrees with the conclusion of the subgroup that avoiding such an outcome will likely require, quote, having a relatively limited number of choices on the menu. So that is a couple of cautions and ultimately a support for maybe not a specific choice, but for the choices that have a relatively limited number of choices. Any comment on this? Caboose, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yes, Greg, I'm sorry I was a little bit late. I am much in favor of the second paragraph of the board's comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Seeing no other hand, move on to a comment from John Poole. I totally disagree with the choice of laws and choice of venue recommendation, which are a recipe for disaster for ICANN. I doubt Jones Day or any lawyer worth their salt would find merit in ICANN being subject to forum shopping by its contracted parties, many of whom are just self-interested, profit-seeking entities trying to exploit consumers, registrants,
any way they can, or ICANN being subject to split decisions by legal authorities in multiple jurisdictions. Can you imagine the legal fees portion of future ICANN budgets if the menu approach was adopted? ICANN already has too many lawyers on its staff, and its legal costs are already too high. These recommendations should be relegated to File 13. ICANN's jurisdiction for choice of law and choice of venues is and should remain Los Angeles, California, U.S., until such time as ICANN is removed to another jurisdiction. Any comments on this comment from John Poole? Kavus, please go ahead.
I'm not quite sure of understood that ICANN should not move to any other jurisdiction. The choice of law does not necessarily say that ICANN move to any other. It depends if, for instance, you take the venue, it depends in the cases. So I don't think that we have black and white on any of these recommendations that ICANN will move to any particular jurisdiction. There is a choice to do that. And so we look at the options. So it depends on which option you take, apart from the status quo. So I don't really understand the meaning of or the conclusion of this comment. Perhaps you may clarify that, your understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. As I read it, this comment suggests that the disagrees with the menu approach in particular, or any of the menu approaches, and really supports, although they say it's the status quo, that ICANN's choice of law and choice of venue is Los Angeles, California. That's really not the case. The status quo is silence, at least on choice of law. So their approach really is, or Mr. Poole's support really could be seen as support for the so-called California approach, as long as ICANN is in fact located in California, and if ICANN gets moved somewhere else, then presumably that venue, or rather that choice of law, should follow if it were moved to Wallace and Futuna. ICANN's law should be the law of Wallace and Futuna, which I believe is French law, but I digress. So that, I think, is really where this comment comes out, especially once you disregard the vivid way in which it's expressed. Yes, and File 13, as David McCauley notes, is also known as the bin, also known as the rubbish bin. So always good to have at least one counterposing comment just for sake of interest. Any comments on this or on the choice of law grouping generally, as we've now gone full circle and come to the choice of venue collection? I see no hands on this, so let's roll over to choice of venue, which brings us back to the business constituency. Which states that the recommendations identify appropriate jurisdiction issues that ought to be addressed in ICANN's contracts and agreements with registrars and registries. The recommendations suggest possible changes to the RA and RAA for study and consideration by ICANN, the organization, the GMSO, and the contracted parties. So that's just kind of a support for the process, as I see it. Any comments on that? Kavus, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yes, it's not on the on the venue choice of law. Your conclusion, I think that maybe it's too quick to have that conclusion that venue is not a good choice. Perhaps it might be a combination of venue and the status quo. Perhaps at the end, so please tell me, or put it somewhere that they might have a combination of the venue and the status quo. If one does not succeed, go to the status quo, but not directly excluding the menu, because menu gives you some choice. Thank you.
If you're speaking, we're not hearing.
Sorry, I was speaking to the mute button. What I was saying is asking, I thanked Caboose and asked if there were any other comments on choice of law or any comments on the comments made in this call on the comments on choice of law. And seeing no hands, so I'll take that as no and move on to the next comments on choice of venue. From the contracted parties, registries and registrars appreciate that the recommendations respecting choice of law and choice of venues are presented as suggestions for consideration. This is the same comment just repeated that was in choice of law, and appreciate having the particular appreciate the particular importance of allowing them to have direct influence over changes that could change their contractual frameworks. Government of Denmark supports the proposals and the document and attaches specific importance to the recommendations regarding choice of law and venue. Russia is also basically the same comment repeated here, noticing support of recommendations relating to choice of law and venues, which provide flexibility of law provisions in registry and registrar contracts. I too comment is basically also the same. Just to point out here, they say that we are making no statement on preference to the approach that should be taken to address venue. We agree that addressing venue would both enhance ICANN accountability and decrease business uncertainty for contracted parties. So that's addressed directly to the venue question. The comment of the ICANN board is the same as before. And INTA is a bit different. It says, while the legal issue is a different one, INTA's position is the same on the merits of a menu approach for the venue provision of the RA as well. But while ICANN cannot assess a menu of venue options without knowing what's on the menu, INTA will ultimately judge the merits of any venue menu through the same prism as a choice of law menu, whether the options on the menu tend to promote uniformity of understanding of the relevant terms of the RA and RAA. If the answer is yes, or if the choice of law questions are settled in such a manner that the venue question is not as relevant to these contractual interpretation concerns, then INTA would support a menu approach for venue as well. So there is a thread of predictability, hope for predictability in the answers, in the comments, although not necessarily always pointing to the same choice. But it's worth noting the desire for predictability. We heard John Poole's comment once, no need to read it again. But it is the same comment, since it embraces both choice of law and choice of venue. Then we have a grouping here on continued discussion of jurisdictional issues. Before that, any comments or questions on the treatment of choice of venue? Seeing none, we can move on. The NCSG, commenting on continued discussions of these issues, says that given that the jurisdiction subgroup has indicated that there is no support for moving ICANN's place of incorporation out of California, the NCSG supports further discussions of jurisdiction-related concerns as the recommendations propose. We acknowledge that the remit of the subgroup is limited and that Workstream 2 could not address all the possible issues due to time constraints. For example, ICANN's jurisdiction might have actual implications on the operation of GTLDs and CCTLDs yet the subgroup did not discuss these implications within Workstream 2, since the ccTLD community saw such discussions as within its remit. While some have argued that recent court cases in the U.S. might have resolved some of the jurisdictional issues that were raised for certain ccTLDs, there may be a need to further elaborate on possible jurisdictional challenges, not only within the ccTLD community, but among the ICANN community as a whole. Any comments on the NCSG's views on this point? Seeing none, we'll move on to the contracted parties, who state, with respect to the suggestion for another multi-stakeholder process to discuss unresolved jurisdiction issues, the registries and registrars do not support such a proposal. Jurisdiction has been a topic of discussion within the CCWG accountability for over 3 years, culminating in recommendations respecting OFAC and governing law and venue clauses that have the potential for yielding positive results for the overall ICANN community. But further discussions regarding jurisdiction in an ICANN context seems unwise. 3 years is more than enough time to develop proposals that have a reasonable chance of gathering community support. And indeed, that appears to be exactly what has happened. Sufficient time, attention, and community resources have been given to the topic. Any comments on this panel? Seeing none, we'll move on. Government of Italy says, in conclusion, Italy believes that further consideration and discussions are required before the approval of any options. That's kind of going to a slightly different point than whether there should be new jurisdictional discussions, but rather that this round has posed questions without necessarily coming all the way to answers. So that needs to be wrapped up. Government of Russia states the Russian Federation would like to suggest the subgroup to continue to engage with development of relevant recommendations, including broader types of immunity from U.S. jurisdiction that could prevent ICANN from being subject to unilateral political or regulatory interference. So here we have a mention of immunity, and I see a comment by Tiago in the chat. There seems to be often a misunderstanding of what discussions about jurisdictional immunity really are. Last in this section, we have a new section, rather, called General. ALAC very much appreciates the work done by our subgroup and the recommendations it has published. ALAC agrees with all the consensus recommendations put forward by the subgroup and especially wants to highlight the following recommendations, which are scattered throughout this document, since that's the format here is to chop up and reform. David McCauley asked if we could save a few minutes to discuss process to get us to the place we need to be on March 9th. Yes, we can do that. Let's maybe just go through the general comments here. Hopefully it won't take more than another 5 minutes. Denmark supports the proposals contained in the document and attaches specific importance to the choice of law and choice of venue recommendations. France, as noted, submitted a document in French, and that is still being translated. We offer the wonders of machine translation. Perhaps a little cleaned up by Bernie. Although the proposals in the report on ICANN's jurisdiction are moving in the right direction, the French government believes they will not be sufficient to genuinely provide a solution to the issues raised by the exercise, unilateral exercise of a particular jurisdiction over an organization whose mandate it is to manage a global common good, the domain name system. Currently, ICANN is a U.S. entity, which has many implications for ICANN's accountability for equality between various stakeholders. This statute induces that ICANN's activities remain framed by the law of one state, that of the United States, and that American courts have jurisdiction over the law. However, the goal of improving ICANN's accountability to the entire Internet community induces that its legal responsibility is to all stakeholders without any advantage over another, and that no individual country may intervene directly or indirectly in the full implementation by ICANN of its global public service mission. In view of the strong divergences in the subworking group, the French government encourages members to explore new avenues, in particular proposing to introduce immunity, including partial immunities, of jurisdiction in ICANN in order to ensure its autonomy and accountability toward the entire global Internet community. Caboose, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yes, with respect to the GNSO, RESC, and RSC, I made a comment in the chat. I was a little bit late as usual, so please kindly accept that in the chat. I don't think it's that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Moving on to Italy. Italy reaffirms that all governments should have an equal role and responsibility for international Internet governance and for assuring stability, security, and continuity of the Internet, citing to Article 68 of the Tunis Agenda. Goes on to say the conflict of jurisdiction on the Internet might have implications with respect to the EU acquis, e.g. as regards data protection and geographical indication. ICANN is the administrator of a global resource, so we will support any solution that ensures that its functioning should not be biased by the jurisdiction of the hosting country. Furthermore, we believe that the future jurisdiction and applicable laws should safeguard the application of principles enshrined in the international conventions in private, international, and procedural law. Caboose, is that a new hand?
Sorry, no, I don't know that. This is a hand, that is the old hand. This is the new hand, yeah.
Thank you, Caboose. Next, and second to last of the general comments comes from the ICANN board, which notes that several of the recommendations are actionable and implementable, and in some instances codify current practice by the ICANN organization. There are other recommendations which may prove problematic to fully address, and we provide our input on those for further consideration. This input is not intended to interfere with this work, but rather to provide information to further the subgroup and the CCWG's efforts as it finalizes its full report. Any comments on this? Caboose, I see your hand is up. And that may be an old hand or that it's a stuck hand, as sometimes happens. Lastly, the ISPCP, the Internet Service Providers and Connectivity Providers, say that the jurisdiction group has done an excellent job of dealing with some of the challenges that come from U.S. jurisdiction. ICANN must maintain its global mission above all else. U.S. law makes that difficult in some circumstances by placing sanctions on certain foreign governments, which ICANN is required to obey. The subgroup has offered a set of recommendations that are sensible ways of approaching that difficult set of circumstances, and we support them. In particular, we are supportive of ICANN actively engaging in the process of assisting contracted parties in seeking waivers from the U.S. Treasury Office of Foreign Asset Control, OFAC. This seems to be a sensible way to uphold ICANN's mission, despite the requirements of the U.S. government. So the second part of this comment really provides a segue into the OFAC discussion, which comes up and takes up the next several pages broken down into its different kind of subparts. But I think that we should stop now, since this is a good natural stopping place, and as David McCauley suggested, we should talk about process between here and March 9th, which is about 6 or 7 weeks. And the idea, I think, is to, correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think the idea is to revise, if necessary, any parts of our subgroup's report, whether it's for clarity or for change in view, and get that to the back to the plenary for further consideration. And as indicated earlier, this is essentially a first reading of these comments. And at this point, nothing is being taken from silence. We're all kind of in midstream at this point. So I see a hand up. I'll take it that the first hand is from David McCauley. Apologies if that's incorrect. David, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. David McCauley speaking for the record. And I'm interested in the process just because as we go through these comments, we recognize, you know, there's variance amongst the comments, and so I'm just wondering where we need to get to. And so I'm going to ask Bernie if you could sort of, Bernie, maybe be a little bit more specific about what you said at the outset. What exactly do we need to have in hand when we walk into the face-to-face meeting on March the 9th? Thank you.
March 9th is the latest date, and actually 1 week before, to allow everyone to read it, so March 2nd, is the latest date possible for the jurisdiction subgroup to submit its final report to the plenary for approval. And if there are no revisions based on the comment, that's fine. We should work on making sure we have answers to all the comments that have been provided, but that's a secondary activity, if you will, which staff can help with once we finish the discussions. But the ultimate and primary goal that we have right now is to march this subgroup, if it wants to have its recommendations included in the final report, must be sent to the plenary. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. So I think what we need to do is to decide if these comments create any changes that we want to make in our report, moving it from the first phase to the final phase, which I think I've noted there were some comments about clarity of language that wouldn't change what we were saying. Those perhaps would be less controversial. Obviously, there are some comments that would push us in one direction or another in terms of recommendations we're making, and we'd need to decide whether we want our report to change, which would require really the consensus of this group. That's my view of what we need to do. Caboose, why don't you go ahead, please?
Yes, sorry, I did not properly follow what Bernie said. Did he say that we need to approve this in the plenary of the CCWG face-to-face ICANN 61, or we need to do the second reading by that time in the working group? So I think there is no way to hurry because there is scope of the comments, some of them with these different colors, is very difficult to grasp.
Bernie, do you want to clarify? Yes. Bernie, do you want to clarify?
Yes.
All right. I'll give it another shot. Thank you, Greg. Caboose, what I said was that this group has to provide final recommendations to the CCWG plenary by 2 March, so they can be read at least once at the ICANN 61 face-to-face meeting on 9 March. So this group has to come to closure on its recommendations by 2 March latest and send them in to the plenary. Thank you.
basically, it sounds like our work needs to be done, essentially, before the plenary, which given that we've made it fairly far through this, almost halfway, I think, is hopeful. David, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. It's David McCauley again. Just one thing in response to what Bernie said earlier about we could, as a secondary activity, I think I heard this, answer these comments. And my suggestion would be, if it's appropriate in this process, and I recognize Bernie's more of an expert at that than I am, but my recommendation would be that we simply state that we have considered these comments, if in fact we have gotten our way through it and had a fair chance to consider them. And as a consequence of that consideration, we suggest these changes or no changes, whatever we come to, but not answer comments. Thank you.
Bernie notes we are required to do so. Can you clarify what we're required to do, Bernie? Sorry about that.
As a minimum, exactly what David has said, many of the other subgroups have decided to answer each comment individually, although often those answers are just copy-pasted from one comment to the other and end up being similar to what David was talking about. So if you will, there can be a happy medium, but the subgroup can decide. The minimum position after a public comment is that, yes, we have to say that we have considered these comments and list which comments those are, meaning who commented, and then say which changes we have decided to bring after considering those. I hope that's clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. I think that's clear. We're now 1 minute before the hour. So our next meeting, as noted, is at the 24th of January at 1900 UTC. And so I recommend reading on to the second part of, or through the remainder, really, of this chart. And for some of the more complex comments, perhaps, I note INTA as one, but there may be others as well. It's definitely worthwhile to go back and read the full comment and not rely only on the summary, especially those that, you know, might create some reasons to possibly take further action. I think we'll need to make sure we understand the underlying comment. So with that, it's now the top of the hour, and so I suggest that we adjourn momentarily. I'll just see if there's any other business. Caboose, is that a new hand? I'm not hearing Caboose, so I'll assume that's an old hand. He says, I have no connection, phone connection, I presume. Also, Caboose also notes we need to be prudent and not hurry in any conclusions. Certainly agree we should not hurry. I think we have ample time, however, to come to conclusions based on what we've received so far, and it's possible there'll be more comments trickling in, but hopefully we'll be close to done with that, or done with that very shortly. So I thank you all. We'll reconvene on the 24th and pick up with the a review of the essentially the OFAC comments, and hopefully make it through all of those and into the end on next week's call. Thank you and goodbye. And this call is now adjourned.